A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hey, Herman and Corin. We did some recent episodes about the history of the what people actually ate in the biblical period in Israel. And coming up to Shavuot, it is a really fascinating time to think about the difference between what we think of Shavuot today. It's a dairy festival. And what it actually meant in the Bible, it was all about the grain harvest. And what we can't talk about grain without talking about the specific grains that were eaten. And we did an episode about how the bread in the biblical period was barley bread. And because of barley's lower gluten structure, it creates bread that is so different than what we know today that you have to actually bake it and eat it to understand what we're talking about, which I mentioned that I did. I procured barley flour and followed a recipe to create biblical barley bread. The issue, I think, with barley bread products, for those who actually want to try this out, is they tend to be like 70% or 50% barley, and you end up getting wheat bread that tastes a bit different, but it's not really barley bread. I would love to do a bit more. Listening to these episodes has rekindled my desire to try working with barley again, and I think it's just such a fantastic grain. I'd love to, for example, try making pizza on a barley basis, and making my own barley bread again. Now, getting barley flour, because it's so less popular than wheat flour these days, is kind of ineffective. You have to go to health food stores. They sell it in these very small bags, and it's a lot more expensive. Barley, however, the actual grain, is very cheap, and I was thinking it's actually for anyone who really wanted to explore working with barley, it might be more cost effective and sustainable to just grind your own flour. I'd love to ask two questions, Herman and Corin. The first is homemade flour grinders. How much do they cost, and can you get one that actually would do a reliable job on barley? You mention often that the barley flour used in biblical times was quite coarse. Can you actually dial in that kind of level of grind on barley flour in a way that you could get those consistencies reliably? And what might those different grinds be used? How might they be used differently in cooking? And finally, we mentioned a clay oven, and definitely one of those things I'd love to own in a future aspirational home would be a pizza oven, because the conventional home oven just doesn't quite approximate the experience. If you wanted to do that, can you actually make pizza on pure barley base? And what else could be done with barley and barley flour if you were really wanted to explore the grain to its full? Over to you.
Shavuot's coming up, and everyone's thinking cheesecake and blintzes. But biblically, this was the wheat harvest festival, and the grain that dominated before wheat was barley. So the prompt asks, can you actually cook with 100% barley flour in a modern kitchen? And what does it take to do it right?
This is a listener who's actually done it. They made the biblical barley bread, they know the taste, and now they want to go deeper. The core problem they hit is exactly what anyone who tries this runs into. Commercial barley flour is a ripoff. Tiny bags at health food stores, $4 to $6 a pound, and most recipes labeled barley bread still use 50 to 70% wheat flour. You're not getting barley bread, you're getting wheat bread with a barley accent.
Wheat bread that went to a barley-themed party. It wore a little name tag that said, "Hello, I'm Ancient Grain."
And the listener's frustration is palpable in the prompt. They went looking for the real thing and kept finding these half measures. So their proposed solution is smart. Buy whole barley grain cheaply and grind your own flour at home. And they're asking three practical things. 1. Can home grinders handle barley and produce that coarse biblical texture? 2. Can you make pizza on 100% barley dough? 3. What else can you do with barley once you have the grinder? This is a practical kitchen episode with some equipment nerdery.
Equipment nerdery is where you shine, Herman. So let's start with the grinder question. Can a home mill actually handle barley? And what are we looking at in terms of cost?
The short answer is yes. Barley mills beautifully at home. It's actually softer than wheat. Barley clocks in at about 48 on the hardness scale versus wheat at roughly 60 to 70 depending on variety. So if a mill can handle wheat, it can definitely handle barley. In fact, it'll probably handle barley more easily. The question is, what kind of mill you want? And there are three tiers.
Lay them out.
Tier 1 is manual hand crank mills. The gold standard here is the Country Living Grain Mill, which runs about $400 to $500. It's built like a tank, stainless steel burrs, adjustable grind from coarse to fine, and it'll outlast you. The budget option is the Victorio VKP1024, around $70 to $90. It works, but it's slower, and getting a truly fine grind takes some arm work.
The Victorio is the I'm curious but not committed option, and the Country Living is for people who've decided grinding grain is part of their identity now. They're going to name their mill and introduce it at parties.
And there is a real difference in the experience. With the Victorio, you're going to be cranking for a while to get enough flour for a batch of bread, and your arm is going to feel it. With the Country Living, the flywheel does a lot of the work. It's almost meditative. Tier 2 is electric impact mills. The Nutrimill Classic at around $279, or the Wonder Mill at about $300. These use stainless steel impact blades or burrs, and they're fast. The Nutrimill can grind a cup of barley from whole grain to fine flour in about 30 seconds. They also have adjustable settings, so you can get anything from coarse cracked barley to powder fine flour.
30 seconds per cup is the difference between I'll bake barley bread this weekend and I have a bag of whole barley in my pantry that I've been meaning to deal with for 6 months. The friction reduction is the whole game with kitchen gadgets.
And tier 3 is attachments for stand mixers. The KitchenAid grain mill attachment runs about $100 to $130. It works for barley, but the grind is less consistent, and it can overheat if you're doing large batches. It's the convenient option if you already own a KitchenAid, but it's not a workhorse. I've talked to people who burned out the attachment motor doing a big batch of cornmeal, and barley is similar enough in hardness that I'd give the same warning.
If someone's serious about this, the $250 to $300 electric mill is the sweet spot. What about the texture question? The prompt specifically asks about dialing in that coarse biblical grind.
This is where it gets interesting. Biblical barley bread wasn't made from the fine white powder we think of as flour today. The grind was much coarser, more like modern cornmeal in texture. And with an adjustable burr mill, you can absolutely replicate this. The key is the gap setting between the burrs. Wider gap gives you cracked barley, about the consistency of bulgur wheat. That's great for porridge or as a side dish, cooked like rice. Medium gap gives you something like cornmeal, perfect for flatbreads and pancakes. Tight gap gives you fine flour, comparable to whole wheat flour, but noticeably silkier because barley has less bran than wheat.
Each of those textures behaves completely differently in dough.
And this gets to the fundamental thing people need to understand about barley. Its gluten content is only 3 to 5% versus wheat's 10 to 14%. Gluten is the protein network that gives dough its elasticity, its ability to stretch and trap air bubbles. Barley simply cannot do what wheat does. When you grind barley fine and try to make a wheat-style loaf, the dough is stickier, it doesn't hold its shape, and it won't rise the same way.
The coarse grind isn't just historical accuracy. It's actually more forgiving, because you're not fighting the lack of gluten as hard.
A coarse barley dough is meant to be dense and crumbly. That's the expected outcome. Fine barley flour makes you think you should get something bread-like, and then the dough just laughs at you.
Dough with a sense of humor is a dangerous thing. Let's talk cost, because the prompt made a good point about economics.
The numbers are pretty compelling. Whole barley grain in bulk. Say a 25-pound bag from Azure Standard or Bob's Red Mill costs about $1 to $2 a pound. Commercial barley flour at a health food store runs $4 to $6 a pound, so you're saving $3 to $4 per pound by grinding your own. A Nutrimill Classic at $279 pays for itself after about 80 pounds of flour. For a regular baker, that's roughly a year.
The listener's instinct is dead on. Grinding your own is the economically rational move if you're going to do this more than a couple of times. But what about the time cost? because grinding your own flour adds a step, and people always underestimate the time cost of DIY projects.
That's a fair question. The actual grinding time for a batch of flour is minimal with an electric mill. We're talking maybe 2 minutes to grind enough for a pizza or a loaf of bread. The real-time investment is in sourcing the grain, storing it properly, and cleaning the mill. You need airtight containers, you need a cool, dry place to store 25 pounds of grain, and you need to run some rice through the mill occasionally to clean the burrs. It's not zero overhead, but it's also not a major time sink. I'd say the total additional time per baking session is maybe 5 minutes.
5 minutes to save $3 a pound. That's a pretty good hourly rate.
There's a quality argument, too. Store-bought barley flour is often de-germed in finer ground than what you'd make at home, which means it's lost some of the oils and nutrients in the germ. Freshly ground barley flour has a noticeably sweeter, nuttier taste. The germ oils are still intact, and those oils contain flavor compounds that degrade within a few weeks of grinding.
You're paying more for an inferior product that's already going stale. The health food store is basically charging you a premium for the privilege of disappointment.
The premium disappointment model. It's a thriving industry.
Of course it is. All right, so we've got our grinder and our flour. Now the big question, can you make pizza on 100% barley base?
Yes, but you need to reset your expectations. This is not going to be a Neapolitan pizza with a puffy, chewy cornicione. Barley dough lacks the gluten network to stretch thin and hold air bubbles, so what you get is denser, more cracker-like. But cracker-like is not a failure mode. It's a different product that's genuinely good if you approach it on its own terms.
The pizza equivalent of, it's not a bug, it's a feature.
And there are specific technique adjustments that make it work. Barley absorbs significantly more water than wheat. For a wheat pizza dough, you typically use 60 to 65% hydration. That's 600 to 650 grams of water per 1,000 grams of flour. For barley, you want 75 to 80% hydration. So 750 to 800 grams of water per 1,000 grams of flour. The dough will be wetter and stickier. That's normal.
You're not kneading this like a traditional pizza dough.
Over-kneading barley dough develops what little gluten it has, which paradoxically makes it tough rather than stretchy. You want a no-knead approach, mix everything together, let it rest for about 30 minutes to fully hydrate the flour, then shape it very gently. Don't punch it down, don't work it. Treat it like you're handling something that doesn't want to be handled.
Like adopting a feral cat. You don't grab it. You let it come to you, sort of.
That's surprisingly apt. Third adjustment, temperature. Barley has a higher sugar content than wheat, which means it browns and burns faster. A wood-fired pizza oven at 800 degrees Fahrenheit would incinerate a barley crust before the cheese even thought about melting. You want your home oven at about 425 degrees Fahrenheit, not the 500 or higher you'd use for wheat pizza.
Which actually addresses the clay oven question from the prompt. They mention wanting a pizza oven, thinking a conventional oven can't approximate the experience. For barley, the conventional oven is actually better.
It really is. A clay oven or wood-fired oven at 800 degrees is perfect for wheat pizza. 90 seconds and you're done. For barley, it's a disaster. The moderate heat of a home oven, around 400 to 425 degrees, with a pizza stone or baking steel, gives you the even heat distribution you need without scorching the crust. The stone or steel also helps with the sogginess problem. Barley dough at high hydration can get gummy in the center if the heat isn't coming from below.
You'd pre-bake the crust?
Yes, that's the fourth adjustment. Shape your dough on parchment paper. It'll stick to everything else, and pre-bake it for about 5 minutes at 425 before adding any toppings. This sets the crust and creates a barrier that prevents the sauce and cheese from turning it into mush. Then add your toppings and bake for another 10 to 12 minutes.
The full recipe, if someone wants to try this.
Here's a workable 100% barley pizza dough. 500 grams of fine ground barley flour, 400 grams of water. That's 80% hydration, 10 grams of salt, 5 grams of instant yeast. Mix it all together, let it rest 30 minutes. The dough will look more like a thick batter than a traditional pizza dough. Scoop it onto parchment paper, use wet hands to gently spread it into a round about half an inch thick. Don't try to stretch it thin, it'll tear. Pre-bake at 425 for 5 minutes, pull it out, add your toppings, back in for 10 to 12 minutes. You'll get a crust that's crisp at the edges, slightly chewy in the center, with a deep, nutty flavor that wheat pizza doesn't have.
the taste difference?
Noticeably nuttier and slightly sweet. Barley has this toasty, almost malted flavor that comes through beautifully in a high-heat application like pizza. It pairs really well with toppings that complement that sweetness. Caramelized onions, roasted garlic, mushrooms, a sharp cheese like pecorino. You wouldn't put pineapple on this.
I wouldn't put pineapple on any pizza, but I take your point. The sweetness of pineapple would fight the malted sweetness of the barley instead of complementing it.
It would be a sugar war on your palate, and nobody wins a sugar war. The other thing worth mentioning, because barley flour has lower protein, the crust won't have that chewy bread-like texture. It's more delicate, almost shortbread, adjacent at the edges. If you go in expecting wheat pizza, you'll be disappointed. If you go in expecting something new, it's delicious.
We've covered pizza. What else can you do with barley flour once you've got the grinder and a bag of grain?
This is where barley really shines, its versatility beyond bread. Let me run through a few categories. Barley pancakes are actually lighter than wheat pancakes because of the lower protein content. Less protein means less gluten development during mixing, which means a more tender crumb. The trick is to use buttermilk. The acidity reacts with the barley's natural enzymes to give you a better rise. Medium grind barley flour, about cornmeal consistency, works best here. You get these pancakes with a toasty, nutty flavor that's fantastic with honey and fresh berries.
Honey and barley is a combination that goes back about 5,000 years, so that tracks.
It really does. This sounds counterintuitive because pasta needs structure, and barley has no gluten. But you can make barley pasta by using eggs instead of water. The egg proteins provide the structure that gluten normally would. Mix fine barley flour with eggs, no water at all, and you get a dough that can be rolled thin and cut into noodles. It's more delicate than wheat pasta and cooks faster, but the flavor is incredible, almost like a nutty, whole grain egg noodle. Toss it with brown butter and sage, and you've got something special.
That's the kind of dish where the grain is the star, not just a vehicle for sauce. I'm imagining a plate of those noodles with nothing but good butter and some fresh herbs, and that's a complete meal.
It really is. And because the pasta is more delicate, you have to watch the cooking time carefully. It goes from perfectly al dente to dissolving in about 90 seconds. But when you nail it, the texture is this tender, almost silky thing that wheat pasta can't replicate. Third, barley flour as a thickener. It makes an excellent roux for soups and stews. The nuttiness adds depth that wheat flour doesn't. A barley roux in a mushroom soup or a beef stew is transformative. The flour toasts beautifully in butter, and because barley has a slightly lower starch content than wheat, it's less likely to turn gummy if you overcook it slightly.
Barley porridge. That's the original biblical breakfast, isn't it?
Coarse ground barley simmered in water or milk for about 30 minutes, served with honey or dates. It's essentially the oatmeal of the ancient Near East. The coarse grind gives it a chewy texture that's different from rolled oats. More substantial, nuttier. If you've only ever had oatmeal, barley porridge is a revelation. And you can go savory with it too. Cook it in broth, top it with a fried egg and some herbs, and you got a meal that would have been recognizable to someone in 7th century BCE Jerusalem.
The grain of the edges, doing everything wheat does but with more character.
I like that. And then there's one more thing worth mentioning, barley malt syrup. You can sprout barley, dry it, and grind it to make a sweetener that was used in ancient Egypt and throughout the Levant. It's a project. You're essentially doing a mini malting operation in your kitchen. But the result is this dark, complex syrup that's like molasses with a toasty, almost coffee-like note. It's what gives bagels their distinctive flavor, by the way. Barley malt syrup is the traditional bagel boil ingredient.
From the same grain, you can get flour for pizza, porridge for breakfast, pasta for dinner, and syrup for sweetening. That's an entire pantry from one bag of grain.
That's really the point. Barley wasn't just the bread grain of the biblical period, it was the everything grain. It was food, it was currency, it was the basis of beer. When you read about grain offerings in the Hebrew Bible, that's barley. When you read about the Feast of Weeks, Shavuot, that was originally the festival marking the end of the barley harvest and the beginning of the wheat harvest. Exodus 34:22 calls it the Feast of Weeks, the first fruits of the wheat harvest. But barley came first. Barley ripens earlier than wheat, so the barley harvest was the first agricultural milestone of the year.
Now Shavuot is cheesecake.
Cheesecake is wonderful. I'm not here to criticize cheesecake. But there's something lost when a harvest festival becomes exclusively a dairy festival. The grain that sustained an entire civilization for thousands of years gets reduced to a footnote.
Let's pull this together into something actionable. Someone's listening. They're intrigued. They want to try this. What do they actually do?
Step 1, buy an electric burr mill like the Nutrimill Classic, about $279, and a 25-pound bag of whole barley grain from a bulk supplier. That'll run you about $30 to $40. You're in for around $320 total, and you'll recoup that within a year compared to buying commercial barley flour.
Step 2, figure out your grind.
For bread and flatbreads, go coarse, like cornmeal. Use a no-knead method with about 75% hydration. The dough will be sticky, the bread will be dense, and that's exactly what you want. For pizza, go fine, like whole wheat flour. And remember the four adjustments: high hydration, no kneading, lower oven temperature at 425, and pre-bake the crust. For pancakes, go medium grind with buttermilk. For porridge, go coarse and simmer it low and slow.
Step 3. Embrace the difference.
This is the most important part. Barley is not a wheat substitute. It's a different ingredient with different strengths. If you try to make barley bread that tastes like your local bakery's sourdough, you will fail and you will be frustrated. But if you approach barley on its own terms, dense, nutty, slightly sweet, with a texture that's more rustic and substantial, you'll discover something good. The biblical diet wasn't about airy, high-rising loaves. It was about whole grains that filled you up and tasted like the earth they came from.
If someone wants to connect this to Shavuot specifically,
try the barley pancakes. They're the easiest entry point, and they're delicious. Serve them with honey and fresh fruit, both biblical staples. And you've got a Shavuot breakfast that honors the grain harvest origins of the holiday while still feeling celebratory. It's not either or with the dairy tradition. You can have your cheesecake and your barley too.
The both-and approach to biblical cuisine.
That's the spirit. And if you really want to go deep, try the barley porridge for dinner the night before Shavuot. The traditional all-night study session was fueled by something, and it probably wasn't cheesecake.
So that's the practical guide. But this opens up a bigger question. What other ancient grains deserve a modern revival?
That's the natural next step. Einkorn, emmer, spelt. Each of these is a different species of wheat with different gluten structures and flavor profiles. Einkorn, for example, has a different gluten protein altogether. It's not the same glutenin and gliadin that modern wheat has, which is why some people with wheat sensitivity can actually tolerate einkorn, and they all grind differently. A home mill that handles barley will handle einkorn and spelt just fine, but emmer is harder and might require a coarser initial setting.
The biblical barley itself. The variety they were growing back then wasn't the same as what we get in bulk today.
Modern barley is mostly hulless varieties. The outer husk separates easily during threshing, which makes processing simpler. Biblical barley was almost certainly a hulled variety, probably Hordeum vulgare, where the husk adheres to the grain and requires additional processing to remove. That's more work, but the husk also protects the grain during storage, which mattered a lot in a world without silos and climate control. Some heritage grain projects are now growing these older hulled varieties specifically for their flavor and nutritional properties.
The home grinder rabbit hole leads to the heritage grain rabbit hole, which leads to the biblical archaeology rabbit hole. It's a very deep burrow.
I'm entirely comfortable down here.
I know you are.
Here's something else worth considering. As interest in heritage grains grows, we might start seeing barley varieties bred specifically for baking quality. Modern barley breeding has focused almost entirely on malting, beer production, and animal feed. The barley grown for those purposes has been selected for enzyme activity and protein content that work for brewing, not for bread. A barley variety optimized for flour production would have different characteristics, maybe slightly higher gluten content, or a finer bran structure. There's work being done on this in Scandinavia and parts of the Pacific Northwest.
The craft barley movement? It was inevitable.
Everything gets artisanal eventually. But it actually matters here because the barley you buy in bulk for grinding is probably a feed or malting variety. It works fine. We've established that. But it's not the optimal barley for flour. If dedicated flour barley varieties become commercially available, the results could be even better.
We're in the early adopter phase of the barley renaissance.
The very early adopter phase. You're grinding your own flour from feed barley and figuring out hydration ratios through trial and error. In 10 years, there might be a barley bread flour on store shelves, and we'll look back at this episode as the pioneer days.
The covered wagon era of barley baking.
With electric mills instead of oxen.
All right, so to recap the actionable takeaways, get an electric bar mill, buy whole barley grain in bulk, adjust your grind for what you're making, and don't try to make barley taste like wheat. That's the whole philosophy in 4 steps.
If you try the barley pizza or pancakes, we want to hear about it. Send your results to prompts at myweirdprompts.com. The successes, the failures, the weird hydration experiments, we'll share the best ones in a future episode.
I'm particularly interested in the failures. Those are always more educational.
They really are. The first time I tried barley flatbread, I used a wheat hydration ratio and ended up with something you could use as a roofing tile.
Yet you persisted.
The nutty flavor was there, even in the roofing tile. That's what hooked me. I stood there in my kitchen, holding this dense disc of barley, and I thought, there's something here. I just have to stop treating it like wheat.
That's the moment of conversion. The grain speaks to you, and you listen.
And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1920s, Tasmanian beekeepers discovered that honey produced from the nectar of the leatherwood tree, unique to Tasmania's rainforests, had such a distinctive floral pine aftertaste that it was initially rejected by mainland Australian buyers as spoiled. The same honey is now considered a premium delicacy and is Tasmania's most famous apiary export.
The defect became the selling point. That's a very Tasmanian story.
Unintentional branding through botanical accident. I respect it. And there's a parallel to our barley conversation. What was once considered inferior, the grain of the edges, the thing you ate when you couldn't afford wheat, turns out to have this depth of flavor and versatility that the mainstream option lacks. The leatherwood honey of the grain world.
That's a lovely connection. Barley as the leatherwood honey of ancient grains. I'm going to remember that one.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop for the fact. And thanks to you for listening. If you try the barley experiments, email us. We want the roofing tile stories.
The successes too, I suppose. Find us at myweirdprompts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Until next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.